It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Where to put them? Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. Like it or not, illegal immigrants are pouring into New York State. They need a place to stay during the summer months. Assembly Democrat Catalina Cruz wants the SUNY system to provide emergency shelter.
We're looking at about 50,000 dormitory units that can house about 100,000 people for the next couple of months.
The asylum seekers could begin arriving as soon as next week in Buffalo. The county executive does not foresee a problem of sharing space with college kids. But New York Senate Minority Leader Rob Ort does.
Any way you slice it, this is going to be disruptive to campus life. There are summer programs, there are summer classes, there are students who do not leave these colleges in the summertime. It's not as if these campuses are completely a ghost town.
Ort would rather the illegal immigrants be housed at convention centers in New York City, similar to what happened during the pandemic. Closing in on a deal, or are they? D.C. negotiators are said to be making progress ahead of next week's deadline on the debt ceiling, but they're not there yet.
It's hard, but we're working. And we're going to continue to work till we get this done.
The only way to move forward is with a bipartisan agreement.
The White House and House Speaker are debating spending caps, and apparently concessions are being made on both sides. But will it be enough? Correspondent Ryan Noble.
They're working to find a sweet spot that will appease cost-conscious conservatives and progressives worried about the impact on social programs.
Speaker McCarthy said today that the talks come down to one thing and one thing only: spending. If a deal can't get done by the 1st of June, the U.S. risks defaulting on its debt for the first time ever. And they're off. The holiday getaway is underway. 42 million of us are on the go for the first unofficial holiday of summer.
We expect 2.5 million people to be flying today. That's a big number.
Correspondent Tom Costello says get to the airport early, at least 2 hours before your flight, and pack your patience. AAA's Dan Armbruster.
This will be the second highest Memorial Day travel volume that we'll have seen since 2000. So a very busy Memorial Day.
And if you're driving, you will be happy to hear gas prices are about a buck less a gallon than they were last year. GOP presidential frontrunners Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis will both be in Iowa next week as they gear up for a bruising nomination battle. Correspondent Alexandria Huff has more.
Next week, DeSantis sets off to key primary states to officially kick off his campaign. He starts in Des Moines, Iowa on the 30th, and it will be a near miss with former President Trump, who arrives in Des Moines the following day.
Iowa, of course, is home to the first-in-the-nation presidential caucuses next year. It'll be here before you know it. New CNN poll out today shows 66% of Americans think a Biden victory in 2024 would be disastrous for the country. 20% of Democratic primary voters prefer Robert Kennedy Jr. over the sitting president. Kennedy was on Fox News last night.
We're living in a time in this country when there's so many Americans who feel like this whole system, the economic system and the political system, are rigged against them. We have to go into diners and get questioned by the public. You know, that's the only way that you really understand the desperation that Americans are living in today.
Political pundit Doug Schoen.
I think Robert F. Kennedy, based on his name, his message, and alienation from the incumbent, could get as much as 30%. Which would be calamitous for the incumbent.
Media critic Beverly Holberg says Biden's age and mental acuity makes a lot of voters nervous.
If he had a stronger vice president, I think people, Democrats especially, independents, would feel a lot better about a Joe Biden vote. But if he's not able to complete a second term, Kamala Harris is the number two, and she has had a lot of troubles as well.
That same CNN poll shows just 26% of independent voters approve of the job the president is doing. That's a 9% dip from December. While we're talking polls, here's one that should absolutely shock you. The survey finds more than one-fourth of Canadians back state-supported suicide for the poor and homeless. One out of every four. 50% of Canadians think people with disabilities should be eligible for assisted suicide. A conservative group is issuing a travel advisory to both Minnesota and California. It warns parents those states have declared themselves a trans refuge state for kids. Both California and Minnesota have passed laws that let minors get sex change operations without parental consent.
If someone has a gender questioning child, absolutely I would stay out of California and Minnesota, because if that gender confused child gets into these states, that child can run away, and the state of California or Minnesota will then decide the fate of that child.
Aaron Friday with the American Principles Project argues the actions taken by California and Minnesota is causing parents to lose custody of their kids to an industry that aims to sterilize and mutilate their bodies. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton facing an impeachment vote in the state house. He's accused of misusing his office to assist a donor. If the House votes to impeach, Paxton would be forced to step down as the top law enforcement official in the Lone Star State. 58-year-old Stuart Rhodes, leader of the Oath Keepers, will be spending the next 18 years in prison. He's the guy who helped orchestrate the January 6th Capitol attack. Correspondent Ken Delanian.
The most high-profile defendant in the January 6th investigation has been sentenced to nearly two decades in prison, the stiffest penalty handed out so far in what has become one of the biggest criminal probes in American history.
Rhodes found guilty of seditious conspiracy for trying to stop Congress from approving the results of the 2020 election. During his sentencing, he claimed he's a political prisoner and his only crime was opposing those who were, quote, destroying the country. The Elon Musk-owned brain implant company called Neuralink has been given approval by the FDA to begin clinical trials on humans. Neuralink is developing a brain implant that it hopes will help paralyzed people walk again. Today is National Poppy Day, a tradition that honors the sacrifices made by our war dead in advance of Memorial Day.
It's a remembrance of everybody, that all the fallen soldiers that gone before us.
Larry Bishop with the American Legion says the significance of the poppy dates back to a poem written by a Canadian medic in World War I.
They found the poppies in Flanders Field. From all the remnants of the war, made these poppies grow. And then the poem in Flanders Field came by this lieutenant colonel, and it took off from there.
That lieutenant colonel was named John McCrae. Navy Vice Admiral John Byrd has more on what inspired that now famous poem.
McCrae observed as one of his friends was being buried, the poppies growing among the crosses in Flanders Field. And he penned a poem by that name.
In Flanders Field has been memorized by millions all over the world. Shortly before his death in 2016, Canadian singer, songwriter, and poet Leonard Cohen recorded it for posterity.
In Flanders Fields, the poppies blow between the crosses, row on row that mark our place. And in the sky, the larks, still bravely singing, fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead. Short days ago we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved. And now we lie in Flanders Fields, take up our quarrel with the foe. To you from failing hands we throw the torch, be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders Fields.
The late, great Leonard Cohen reciting in Flanders Fields, a 130-foot-long wall with 645,000 poppies on it is on display this weekend on the National Mall in D.C. The poppy wall will be open to the public through Sunday. Still to come on this Friday edition of the Noon Report, Mastriano won't run, missing teen from Western New York, and Indian remains in Pennsylvania.
Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Williams.
Times calling for a lovely Memorial Day weekend weather-wise. Forecast details are coming up in 10. All right, we'll see you then. Thank you, Kevin. Pennsylvania State Senator Doug Mastriano will not seek the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate next year. In a 40-minute appearance on Facebook Live last night, the conservative said despite his decision not to seek that statewide office, he is not going anywhere.
Throughout history, you know, great men and women like George Washington and Abraham Lincoln, even Ronald Reagan faced setbacks and lost elections and, you know, and heard cries in some of these cases of people, you know, move on from them. They're, you know, they can't win, you know, and on. Absolutely not. We have to persevere.
Yep. Mastriano says he will back the eventual nominee, whomever that is, to challenge current Senator Bob Casey Jr. Mastriano lost last year's gubernatorial race to incumbent Democrat Josh Shapiro. A missing 13-year-old girl from Grand Island, New York, is believed to be in Pennsylvania with a man whom she met online. Haley Williams disappeared early Thursday after being lured away from her home. Williams' stepmom, Jessica.
I feel like it's a total out-of-body experience, something that is not really true.
Police believe the missing teen snuck out her bedroom window in the middle of the night to go with a stranger she met online.
We were told that she hates school, that she just wanted to be on her own and live her life.
Grand Island Superintendent Brian Graham says this case serves as a reminder to parents, keep tabs on what your kids are doing online.
I would stress so importantly that parents reconsider giving young children access to those devices.
It is a felony to transport minors across state lines, and the FBI is now assisting in this missing person case. Lawmakers in Albany have approved legislation that requires gender-neutral language in state laws. A bill passed both the Senate and Assembly, requiring any law, rule, regulation, or resolution to include gender-neutral terms such as they, them, or theirs. Indian remains in central Pennsylvania are being dug up and returned to Native American territory.
Bob, the remains of five more Native American children who died at a government-run boarding school in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, over a century ago, will be disinterred from a small army cemetery and returned to descendants. The remains are buried on the grounds of the U.S. Army War College. The children attended the former Carlisle Indian Industrial School, where thousands of indigenous children were taken from their families and forced to assimilate into white society as a matter of U.S. policy back then. The Office of Army Cemeteries says the latest disinterment will happen in September. It's the sixth of those occasions since 2017. Cemetery officials say 28 children have been returned so far. Greg Gillespie, Family Life News.
All right, Greg, thank you. A Pennsylvania politician continues to push for a memorial at the state capitol that recognizes the sacrifices of Gold Star families who've lost loved ones in service to this country. Representative Joe Kerwin says a memorial in Harrisburg has bipartisan support and the backing of foundations that have pledged to pay for it without using tax dollars. A field of flags will be on display in Niagara Falls this weekend.
A field of 850 American flags will be on display in an area of Hyde Park just south of the Veterans Memorial. The new attraction honors those who have served in the military, and it opens to the public tomorrow. The field of flags is expected to remain in place until the 4th of July. In order for the flags to be displayed at night, the groups purchased lighting that was installed by local members of the Electrical and Ironworkers Union, who donated their labor to complete the project. Dee Haley, Family Life News.
Thank you, Dee. Just 2 weeks left in the New York legislative session, and lawmakers are rushing to finalize a number of bills before they adjourn for summer. One is called the Crash Victims Bill of Rights. It would, among other things, require a 3-foot passing buffer for bicycles on highways. Amy Cohen lost her son, Sammy, when he was struck on his bike in Brooklyn a decade ago.
These are simple solutions. They cost no money. Everybody can be slightly inconvenienced to save a life.
Ann Savage with the New York Bicycle Coalition.
New York is suffering from a preventable crisis of traffic violence. New Yorkers are losing their lives for no reason.
The Crash Victims Bill of Rights would also allow New York City to set its own speed limit and incentivize authorize the building of safer streets using federal dollars. A new federal rule could remove flavored milk as an option in Pennsylvania schools.
Young students could soon be without chocolate and strawberry-flavored milks as an option at school cafeterias if a federal proposal is approved, and some Pennsylvania officials are cautioning against the potential change. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has proposed banning flavored milk as a cafeteria option for elementary and middle school students. If accepted, the rule would likely go into effect for the 2025-2026 school year. Brian Querry, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brian. And a story we just had to share with you today. For the second week in a row, a 46-year-old golfer has hit an amazing shot at a PGA event.
Oh, we got it over the tree. And this looks good. Get up. Just add it to the legend.
Yeah. After hitting a hole-in-one in last week's PGA Championship, Michael Block, a golf instructor from California, hit another incredible shot, this one from a bridge at the Charles Schwab Challenge in Texas. You got to see it to believe it. Hey, we've got more sports next on the Family Life Noon Report.
Good afternoon, I'm Randy Snavely. Bob, the Boston Celtics are making things interesting in the Eastern Conference Finals. They avoided elimination again, defeating Miami 110-97. The Heat's lead now only one game at 3-2. Jason Tatum once again led the way for the Seas, scoring 21 points, dishing out 11 assists, and grabbing 8 boards. Game 6 tomorrow night, back in Miami. On the ice, the Dallas Stars avoided the Bruins as they edged Vegas 3-2 in overtime behind a goal from Joe Pavelski. The Golden Knights still in the driver's seat with a 3-1 lead. On the diamond, the Orioles claim the rubber game in their series with the New York Yankees. Austin Hayes doubled home a pair of runs in the eighth inning, and they proved to be the game-winning runs, 3-1 the final. The Rays doubled up the Jays, 6-3. Detroit beat the White Sox 7-2, and Seattle edged Oakland 3-2 in the other American League games. Over in the National League, four different New York Mets players drove in two runs apiece as the Mets cruise to a 10-1 win over the Cubs in Chicago. Pete Alonso, Brett Beatty, Brandon Nimmo, and Starling Marte all two RBIs in the game. Alonso hit his major league leading 19th home run. The Phillies fell to the Braves 8-5. Both Alec Baum and Bryce Harper went deep in the loss. The Padres outlasted Washington 8-6. The Giants shut out the Brewers 5-0. Colorado edged the Marlins 7-6. And St. Louis eked out a 2-1 win over Cincinnati. That is a look at sports.
All right, Randy, have yourself a wonderful weekend. Still to come on the Noon Report for a Friday, John Stone Street taking a closer look at the persecuted church in today's Breakpoint Commentary. The Capital Connection crew ready to chime in on all that's happening in Albany and Harrisburg. And yeah, we've got some wonderful weather on the way. Chamber of Commerce type weather for that Memorial Day weekend. Kevin Williams coming up right after this.
Welcome to Breakpoint, a daily look at an ever-changing culture through the lens of unchanging truth. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. According to tradition, St. Thaddeus and St. Bartholomew evangelized the region of Armenia in the first century. In the year 301, it became the first nation to declare itself Christian. Through centuries of warfare and oppression, its Christian identity has endured as part of Armenian culture, despite the repeated attempts by many of their neighbors to stamp it out. In 1915, the Turkish Ottoman Empire killed an estimated 1.2 million people in what's now known as the Armenian Genocide. Under the pretext that they were insufficiently loyal to the empire, Ottoman authorities shot entire villages, forcibly converted families to Islam, and marched hundreds of thousands of women and children into the Syrian desert to die. The brutal campaign of extermination led to a significant diaspora of Armenians into other countries. Even after Armenia emerged from Soviet dominance and declared itself an independent republic at the end of the 20th century, peace has remained elusive. And in 2020, even as the world was preoccupied with a global pandemic, Azerbaijan waged war against Armenia. 7,000 lives were taken, and the region has remained in the shadow of a fragile ceasefire ever since. Today, most Armenians live in a state of uncertainty. Given their control over the region, it may be that Azerbaijan is poised to commit a second Armenian genocide. According to researcher Thomas Becker of the University Network for Human Rights, quote, over the past decade, Azerbaijani officials have invoked language used in the Rwandan genocide and the Holocaust, referring to Armenians as a cancer tumor and a disease to be treated. And more recently, the country's authoritarian leader has threatened to drive Armenians away like dogs, end quote. However, an unexpected recent development is that a significant number of Armenia's diaspora population has been returning to their homeland. Even after 100 years of exile, living in places like Russia, France, and the U.S., an estimated 50,000 Armenians repatriated just prior to 2020, and thousands more have joined them every year since. For some, the motivation to return is economic. For others, it's about standing with fellow Armenians in the face of war. However, for still many others, the calling is just about their faith. As the dean of Armenian Apostolic Seminary put it, we as a nation are called to witness to Jesus Christ in a very difficult region. Our very existence is a testimony of Christianity, end quote. Lara Satrakian, an Armenian-American journalist, moved back with her family at the beginning of the COVID-19 outbreak. And in a recent podcast, she described it this way. I'm doing what I'm called to do. It's to be a helper, like Mr. Rogers would say. This is a catastrophe. There are crises, but I want to be among the helpers. We're not interested in not being Christian. For Christians, this country is one big test of faith. And people I see are rising to the occasion. They're finding strength, and they're not ever going to give up. They haven't given up the cross. They haven't given up their language, their love, their dance. They embody the resilience we're all looking for. As so many in the West reel from a crisis of meaning, Armenian Christians have found joy, even in the face of severe hardship. And in that way, we have much to learn from these brothers and sisters, even as we ask God to bless them, to strengthen their faith, and to bring peace to this nation that they're rebuilding. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint. Today's Breakpoint was co-authored by Casey Leander. For more resources to live like a Christian in this cultural moment, go to breakpoint.org.
All right, let's go outside next. Kevin Williams.
Here is your family life weather forecast. Our call for today, bright and sunny through the afternoon hours. Temperatures reaching into the 60s and low 70s, dropping back into the 40s tonight. And then for tomorrow, Sunday, most of Monday, mainly sunny, warming up. High temperatures reaching the 70s, the lower 80s come Sunday and Monday for some. It'll be a little cooler during the afternoons near Lake Erie in Ontario.
All right, we'll take it. Thank you very much, Kevin. And it's Friday, folks, the 26th of May. You're listening to the Noon Report on Family Life. And welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays during the Noon Report, we give you, the listener, direct connection to what's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues. At the state capitals, they are, as always, Jason McGuire at New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms and Michael Gere at the Pennsylvania Family Institute. Well, Jason, you've had a busy week. First time in about 3 years that Legislative Day returned in person to Albany. I know a lot of people were excited to have it back live. If you would kind of give us an update about how things went back on Tuesday.
Well, I think it went well. It felt really good to, as you say, be back in person, to kind of feel like you're getting back to how things used to be. It's just good to be with other people and talk about the issues they care about. Something that was really special was a large contingent from that day went over to the governor's offices and what they call the war room, and people just prayed for the governor and for our state. It was a powerful moment for Christians around the state to come together and intercede for the Empire State.
I know there's a lot to pray about, too, in the closing days of the legislative session. We're going to get into the nitty-gritty in just a bit. But, Michael, first, big news out of Harrisburg, too. House panel this week, party line vote, passing new hate crimes legislation. When you hear about hate crimes legislation, typically people think, well, that's good. You're going after hate. But this is not good. Explain.
Yeah, it's Representative Dan Frankel is the lead sponsor of that. He's from Allegheny County. The underlying problem with his package of hate crimes bills is their intention to silence people using criminal consequences that could lead to blacklisting and demonizing those who hold to opposing views in terms of sexuality, marriage, and what it means to be male. male and female. So it really creates a snitch culture. There's a provisions in the bill that allow for anonymous tips, as it were, to report somebody that then launches an investigation because of what somebody says or thinks.
All right, we'll see where that goes. Should come up for a vote next month in the full House, so we'll keep our eyes on it. Jason, the migrant crisis continues to be the big story in New York. Looks like Governor Hochul is going to announce soon that SUNY schools are going to be housing these migrants. One of those schools is in our listening area, SUNY Buffalo. Your thoughts on this ongoing crisis and maybe how local leaders are reacting to it? There seems to be a lot of miscommunication between the federal government, the state government, and these county executives.
Yeah, that's true. And certainly this is still, I think, first and foremost, a problem for the federal government to rectify. The mess is now being left on the rest of local government to deal with. We have all these empty prisons across New York State, and I can't figure out why, if we're closing five or more prisons, why they couldn't be used as temporary housing, why we're using these campuses instead. Students are coming back in August, and it just doesn't make any sense to me to use the college housing when the prisons are sitting empty.
Yeah, it looks like Mark Polenkars in Erie County says he doesn't care if the students are there while the migrants are there. They'll both be on campus at the same time, so we'll see how that plays out. Michael, the Pennsylvania chapter of the National Right to Life is sounding the alarm over new legislation from Representative Melissa Schusterman. I hope I'm saying her name right. This would provide taxpayer-funded abortions in Pennsylvania. How concerned should pro-lifers be about this bill?
Well, we should always be concerned about efforts to try to advance abortion in Pennsylvania and use taxpayer funding for it. In all likelihood, it's not expected to pass this session. Nevertheless, we need to remain vigilant. And part of the lessons that we can learn from this is right now we have a divided legislature. We have a Republican Senate, a Democrat House. But if the Republican Senate, which is pro-life led, were to switch in this next election in 2024, we could see what happened in Virginia with pro-abortion laws. Same thing happened in New York State. So we need to be vigilant and then get involved in the elections.
Yeah. Neil Gorsuch, the Supreme Court Justice, Jason, had an amazing article last week, and I encourage everyone to go read about what we gave up during COVID when it comes to closing schools and vaccine mandates and just how outside the bounds of the U.S. Constitution a lot of these draconian measures were. But we are increasingly putting COVID in the rearview mirror. News this week regarding the COVID vaccine mandate for healthcare workers, some 34,000 nurses in New York lost their jobs over this. Looks like that's coming to an end. What's your reaction?
Well, my reaction is it's once again demonstrates how governmental leaders are doing what they know is unconstitutional and forcing citizens to go to court to get their rights back. And that's problematic because in that time, you're not only losing your constitutional rights, but it also costs a great deal to go to court. So when you're thinking about those candidates for office, find ones that respect the Constitution because they're too readily willing to give it up.
Michael, big news on gun reform this week. The Pennsylvania House, again, passing legislation on a mostly party line vote. Your thoughts overall on these new gun reforms coming out of Harrisburg?
Yes, House Bill 1018, which is called a red flag proposal. The other one, House Bill 714, which deals with background checks. Again, this was largely party line vote, and that indicates the real divide that exists on the issue of gun control. In terms of whether or not it would make a big difference if this were to become a law in Pennsylvania, I think it would raise concerns with gun owners in Pennsylvania. The red flag also raises concerns because if someone gets reported for having some potential psychological issue or whatever, then requires the law enforcement to go in and seize the gun, which is a very dangerous circumstance to consider. Whether it passes, it's probably not likely in this session based on what we can surmise.
Gotcha. One of the things you raised this week at Legislative Day, Jason, was the erosion of parental rights in New York. There is a legislation on that front that should concern every parent in the state. It has to do with teenagers, vaccines, and sexually transmitted diseases. What's going on here?
Yeah, there's a bill that seems to be moving in both houses, sponsored by some very aggressive legislators that tend to move their bills very well in the last few days of session. And this bill, Assembly 276 by Assemblywoman Amy Paulin, would allow minors to be treated for sexually transmitted diseases, including receiving vaccinations without parental knowledge or consent. And I'll remind you again, a student cannot get an aspirin in school, but they could get a vaccination without parental consent. We've got to get our priorities right.
Unreal. About a minute left, guys. Jason, you know, we were talking about these these final few days of the legislative session and how people need to really keep an eye on what's going on, because some of the most dangerous legislation will slip through this time of year. What are you keeping an eye on in that mad dash to the finish line?
Well, there's a bill that's getting late legs, and it's one that would cause faith-based schools to have to choose between compromise or closure. It would extend the Dignity for All Students Act, that anti-bullying law here in New York State, but also all that goes along with that, with LGBT affirmation, and force it in private schools in the state. We're working to block that in the final days.
All right. June 8th is still when they're trying to get out of town?
They've extended it to June 9th, and it may go later.
All right, we'll see. Michael, kind of interesting. I know Senator Ryan Aumit is a guy that you like a lot. He put forth a legislation this week that kind of would change how they do primary elections in the Commonwealth. If you don't get 50% of the vote, then there'd be an automatic runoff. Do you think that's a good idea?
I have mixed feelings about it. I understand the rationale for it, which is when you have these wide open primaries where you have multiple candidates, ultimately you don't necessarily get the best candidate, or one that if all the voters could choose just between two, they would choose. The mixed feeling about it, though, is that it would tend to stifle the ability for challenge candidates who can't raise a ton of money to have to run twice. If they don't get to that 50% mark, but then it's narrowed down to two candidates, the challenging candidate may have more trouble because the incumbent or the lead candidate will have more of an ability to raise money. I think the parties need to really get involved in more in the endorsements and things to try to winnow the field rather than perhaps changing the law.
I guess whatever you do, don't go to Twitter to make the announcement. those things can go sideways from time to time. Hey guys, thank you so much for joining us. We've been a lot of places the last 10 minutes, but Michael, if folks have questions about that new hate crime bill in Harrisburg and why they need to be concerned, where can they learn more?
PAfamily.org.
And it's almost over, the state legislative session in Albany, but there's a lot going on still. Jason, information on your website, sir.
AlbanyUpdate.com.
All right, very informative. Thank you, gentlemen. Capital Connection comes your way Fridays during the Noon Report or online anytime, familylife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Well, it looks like we're set weather-wise for this Memorial Day weekend. For your plans to attend parades and commemorations, of course, as we honor those who have paid the ultimate sacrifice for our country's freedoms. Or maybe you're heading out to the lake or the cottage. Whatever your pleasure, slap on the sunscreen if you're sunburn sensitive, potentially, and enjoy what looks like a terrific weekend as high pressure dominates. Our call for today, bright and sunny through the afternoon hours. Temperatures reaching into the 60s and low 70s, dropping back into the 40s tonight. And then for tomorrow, Sunday, most of Monday, mainly sunny and warming up. High temperatures reaching the 70s, the lower 80s come Sunday and Monday for some. It'll be a little cooler during the afternoons near Lake Syrian, Ontario.
All right, thank you, Kev. Finally, noon, one sheet of paper and a few folds, and guess what? You've got yourself a sport. Bree Tennis is everything you need to know about National Paper Airplane Day.
It's believed the origin of paper airplanes comes from ancient China. It's really just origami. The average plane has four folds. Science tells us the longer the plane, the longer it will stay airborne. Three aerospace engineers hold the world record for the farthest flight by a paper airplane, with theirs gliding 289 feet 9 inches, and the Australian company BioLab says throwing a paper airplane is considered a sport. I'm Bree Tennis, NBC News Radio.
All right, Bree. That's the world we live in Friday, the 26th of May. Have a wonderful and safe holiday weekend. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.